This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Muthan, and you're about to embark on the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
It's full octane Kelly and Ramya with all the fixins.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's invited. And now, the host of today's show, Ramya Amuthan.
Welcome to Kelly and Company on a Friday afternoon. We're just settling down here because, and you know I totally missed this, okay? But it is now the second day of fall, officially. Akhil Chinsang, who is our technical assistant, technician, producer for today, he was telling me and telling us over the pre-show meeting that yesterday was the first day of fall. And I thought, whoa! When did this even happen? But yeah, it's officially fall and it really feels a lot like the cold weather is here. I don't want to say to stay, but it feels like it because we've all got our hoodies out and the heater's on in the house. Kelly McDonald is working through some stuff at home, you know, lack of electricity. Therefore, he's not joining us live at the moment. We don't want to take him off completely on the show yet because he might be joining us in the second hour for a little bit. But in the meantime, Jeff Ryman is here. So, Jeff, you're here. I'm here. Akhil's here. What are we calling the show right now?
We're calling it the Millennial Show.
Nice.
You know, I'm kind of down for that. Give you a little bit of millennial flair, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
But going back to your thought on fall and so drastic, where like a week ago here in Ontario, it was hot and humid, like 25, 30 degrees. You could go to the beach, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
And now you look outside, you walk outside, for sure fall weather. Like you need that sweater. And I'm usually the last person to start throwing on heavier clothing, for sure pants. Like that's still a couple of months away. I'm in short mode right until probably November or so. But I was throwing on a sweater today and I went outside, took my dog for a walk, and I'm like, whew, like you definitely do need that sweater. And you add in the little bit of rain and the mist and the sogginess. Is that a word? I'm gonna say the sogginess outside. It's kind of creepy, and I'm into it with Halloween coming up right around the corner.
Yeah, that's a good point too. It feels like Halloween's around the corner, Thanksgiving, and usually by Thanksgiving we are getting that chill in the air feel anyway. So it's a nice start. I mean, technically we're a week away from October, so it's not that it's surprising. It's just that, you know, we still yearn a little bit. We're like, oh man, it's cloudy for real this time. But you know, we'll keep everybody cozy while we talk on a Friday afternoon here on Kelly and Company, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio. Let's find out what's coming up on today's show. Amazon has banned over 600 companies for fake reviews. We're going to find out how exactly they're doing this and why with John Beeler of The App Show.
Love this next story. A father from Hamilton has developed an app to let parents know exactly when the school bus will be arriving at their stop. We learn more about this initiative with Karen McGee from Ottawa.
I love it. Also, we're going to talk to the Learning Disability Society, who we were supposed to check in with yesterday. They weren't able to make it on the show, but they announced a new mobile outreach program, LDS Access, intended to work as a classroom on wheels. Dr. Jennifer Fain will be joining us. She's the director of LDS, LDS Director of Education, and she'll be joining us in the second hour of Kelly and Company. So, Jeff, we're kind of doing an entertainment bit right now for the next few minutes. So tell us where we're going to start.
And this is where that millennial flair may pop up just a little bit. Just a little bit. But yeah, two entertainment stories here. And the first one, a group of beloved children's characters is coming back.
It's the return of the Teletubbies.
Time for the Teletubbies.
The children's characters putting out their first full-length album since 1998. It'll be called Ready, Steady, Go, and we're getting a taste of the title track.
Ready, steady, go!
The full video for the song will be out Saturday, with a new video every Saturday for 10 weeks. The album Ready, Steady, Go will be out October 15th. Jason Nathanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
I know it's just the music, it's an album, but regardless, the Teletubbies were a huge part of my childhood. And it was kind of funny just talking with you and Akil offline just before we started the show. And it seems that we all have different memories of the show and different things we like, different things that maybe we didn't like, and things that we just look back on. And it's kind of creepy in general what was going on in the show. But nonetheless, I mean, it was probably one of the biggest children's TV shows on specific networks, and I remember watching it pretty much every day. It was probably my favorite show when I was about 4, 5, maybe 6 years old, and the one thing that I loved, and I've always loved food, and for some reason the one thing that sticks with me all these years later is the food that they ate. And they had these things that looked like pancakes, but they looked better than pancakes. And they were shaped, I think, as Teletubbies or some different shape. And every time they had that, I was kind of jealous. And it's nostalgic. It's one of those shows that's super nostalgic. And every time that it gets brought up, usually millennials like ourselves, we usually have a good conversation and sort of reminisce on that. So it's kind of nice to coming back in a certain capacity here.
Yeah, it is. I mean, okay, I'm not going to lie, though. When I hear the sample of that title track, I'm like, does this even sound like the Teletubbies as we know it? And when I say as we know it, I mean like the OG Teletubbies, right? Because I don't know what happened after that. I think they have a live action and, you know, the generations have changed. But it's just in me sounding like an old lady, I'll just say that when I heard that title track, I'm like, this doesn't sound like the twinkly Teletubbies I know. But whatever, man, appease the younger people and do what happens. But it is a real nice walk down nostalgia lane. What's next?
Yeah, so again, sticking maybe not so much with millennial themed things, but I know it was huge on Netflix last year. And I know everybody seemed to talk about it. And a popular streaming television miniseries, one that everybody's familiar with, is getting a second season.
My name's Joe Exotic, and this is Sarge.
When Tiger King debuted on Netflix at the beginning of the pandemic lockdowns in March of 2020, it was one of the few non-COVID things people were talking about. The show ended with its main subject, Joe Exotic, in prison. And since it aired, others have been arrested. Some of the subjects have died, and others, looking at you, Carol Baskin, have gone on Dancing with the Stars.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
Now Netflix is giving us more Tiger King, the streaming service announcing Thursday that a second season will be out later this year. No date or other details yet. Jason Nathanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
Run really quick. Yes or no? Are you going to watch this? Is this intriguing to you?
I don't know if it'll be as good as season one. And when I say good, I mean, I really just watched it for entertainment's sake. I couldn't believe this stuff is on TV. I know Dave Brown and Daniel Penamondo were talking about it this morning about how they absolutely hated it. I found it very, very entertaining. However, usually when stuff like this happens, these guys are just too big for their own good. Now, I don't know if season two is going to be good. You?
No, I think I'm going to pass. I watched it because everybody was watching it. I didn't really like
it. You hated it too,
and I just don't know how they're going to make a season two. I thought Joe Exotic was in jail. That's sort of how they left it. I could be out of loop on that right now, but I'm going to say no. I probably won't watch this.
Yeah, well, I kind of agree with you. I don't think it's going to be good. After the break, Jeff Ryman's going to stick around with a more particular role. He's going to be giving us our lifestyle headlines. That's after the break here on Kelly and Company. Listening to Kelly and Company. I'm Ramya Amuddin, and co-hosting with me for this hour, at least, is Jeff Ryman, our producer on the show. Oh, sorry. Co-producer on the show along with myself. Don't want to ruin that trend that Kelly has started. Also, if you want to get a hold of us because you want to give us your opinion on the co-producer stuff, 1-866-509-4545 is how you can reach out. Also, you can leave a voicemail there, and if you want us to play your voicemail on air, please give us permission to do that. Feedback at AMI.ca is our email address. And on Twitter, we are at AMI Audio. Hashtag Kellyco if you want to get something direct to us. Now, on Fridays, we like to check in on the latest lifestyle stuff. So let's formally bring on Jeff Ryman.
From fashion to travel, pets, and more, we cover it all on the Lifestyle Report with me, Jeff Ryman.
Jeff, you hear your voice a lot on these, we call them doorbell IDs. Are you desensitized to them now?
You know what? it's kind of weird. Like, there are certain ones that I like and certain ones that I don't like. It's almost like when you listen to yourself too much, after you record yourself, or in our instance, like when we're on air, like it just sometimes like I'm okay with it. And sometimes I'm like, I sound like that. Like, what? And I'll probably do that when I'm done the show and listen back to it. I'll be like, oh, I can't believe I sound like that. Like, what's the issue here? But I don't know. It's something about your own voice. Like, it's like,
yeah, it is.
In your own mind, you think you sound one way, then you listen back to it and it sounds nothing like what you imagined. That's kind of like how I am. What about you?
Yeah, no, I can't stand hearing my voice. And I know we joke around, but the higher my voice goes, and then when people take it and they say, see, look at, listen to how high it goes. I'm like, oh no, I'm just going to, turn my volume down.
No, but yeah, I agree. Sometimes I will turn the volume down on my headset so I don't hear myself through my headset. That's how much it kind of bugs me. I go to great extremes to not listen to myself sometimes.
As a radio broadcaster.
This is, I mean, I've got some fun articles here for lifestyle. And I wanted to keep it light on a Friday, of course. And I forget if we talked about this one or not. And stop me if we have, but I thought it was a great idea. And it has to do with taxis in Thailand. And I feel like we've talked about it somewhere on this network, whether it's now or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But regardless, it's super cool. And taxis in Thailand that have been idled by the coronavirus, of course, because not many people are going out and traveling, especially via taxi, as much as maybe they used to. But that doesn't mean the cabs are just sitting idle. So workers from two taxi companies have been using the roofs of cabs as small vegetable pots. And that's really cool. I thought this was pretty intuitive of these taxi companies. And the veggie beds are fashioned from black plastic garbage bags stretched across bamboo frames. And then on top of that, soil is added for planting tomatoes, cucumbers, and string beans. So seeing rows of cabs with vegetation sprouting off the tops is a striking reminder of how badly taxi drivers have fared during the pandemic. And the numbers are just as striking. Two major cab companies in Bangkok say their 3,000, of their 3,000, they have only 500 on the road with fewer riders. So cut drastically in Thailand. So they're trying to do everything they can to still use those cabs in kind of an interesting fashion. And just seeing the picture and pictures of this, it literally is like you're at a junkyard where there's, or at a car dealership where there's rows and rows and rows of just taxis. And on top, like I just mentioned, little black garbage bags as the pot and soil on top and vegetables literally sprouting from this. And wow, it's just so unique. Like I guess that's one way to use what you have in this instance. Personally, it's something that's never crossed my mind, but I think it's actually a really good idea, especially if you're not going to use that. And of course, then you can either sell those tomatoes, or of course, you can use them yourself. Then you have tomatoes, cucumbers, and string beans all to yourself. So I just wanted to talk about this because it's kind of travel-ish related, and it's also a little bit of lifestyle where we get, you know, some gardening. Some food in there as well. Yeah, gardening, exactly.
Yeah, but no, but it's interesting. Like when you say, I would have never thought of that. I know I still kind of can't wrap my head around how someone would have came up with this, because when you think cabs or, you know, mobile, you don't really think of it as something more stationary, like gardening, planting, you know, soil, stuff like that, right? Unless it's like, you know, simply sale, mobile sale. But yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And it was just really cool to see that pop up. I think it popped up on my social medias where I saw the picture. And it was kind of striking because there were like hundreds of cars. Like I mentioned, they're only using 500 of 3,000 cars. And the majority of the cars that aren't in use, they're using that essentially as a garden. So you can only imagine how many fruits and vegetables they were able to get from just using these taxis as some sort of green space. So obviously good for the environment too. So
yeah, of course. Is it just tomatoes, string beans, and cucumbers, as you said, right now? Or is that...
I think that's all they have currently. I'm sure that you could probably plant basically whatever you want.
But I wonder why those, though.
Yeah, I mean,
tomatoes, I think of those as needing staking, right? Like, in general?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, but...
Well, same with beans. Beans, you might need, like, and cucumbers, all those things. Like, if you've ever grown a cucumber plant, my goodness. I actually, you know, being a new homeowner, we had our garden, a garden. So I've never gardened. When I lived at my parents would have just a flower garden, but I wanted vegetables. So my girlfriend and I planted some vegetables, and our tomatoes did okay. Yeah. Some sort of bird or raccoon or squirrel or something started eating our tomatoes.
Got into it before you did.
Yeah, exactly. I had a jalapeno plant, didn't really grow too well. I think our soil is the huge problem, but we also had, my girlfriend's parents had a cucumber plant, and my next door neighbor also had a cucumber plant, and their cucumber plants grow like super long. Like it just takes up, like it would take up your whole car if you're planting it on top of your car. Like the vines would hang off of the vehicle. So these things do get big, but it's kind of interesting. You bring up a good point about using stakes or some sort of device that would keep these plants upright. But I guess if you have cars row on row on row, they can sort of overflow onto each other. But yeah, I thought it was just a unique idea by, you know, some of these taxi companies in Thailand to essentially you could either let your car just sit there or you could turn it into a garden, which is a very, very inventive, so to speak. So good on them. I want to switch to some pets, and I know you're a pet lover. I'm a pet lover, and Kelly's not here, so we can talk cats and dogs all we want.
Not that it's ever stopped us.
Really cool. Yeah, that's very true. We talk about it a lot, actually, and I'm glad. It's great. It's kind of light, and this one almost on the verge of a what in the world as well sort of piece. But I thought, you know, it's Friday, and let's have a little bit of fun. So. I'm sure you've heard of the expression fighting like cats and dogs. And for decades, the two species have been used as an example of opposites who just can't get along. However, there's nothing but a forever friendship between Sashimi, a 7-year-old Bengal cat, and Lollipop, a 5-year-old Boston Terrier from Ontario. And they play together, train together, and most surprisingly, they scoot around together. And last September, the unlikely pair had broken the record for fastest 5-meter on a scooter by a cat and a dog with a time of 4.37 seconds, becoming two of the stars of the Guinness World Records 2022 book. So when you pick up the next edition of the Guinness World Records book in 2022, they will be all over this place. A cat and a dog on a scooter went 5 meters. I didn't even know this was a record.
I was gonna ask.
You can almost have a record for anything, but whenever you have a cat and a dog on a scooter doing this, like, it's just so visually appealing, and it's just so mentally appealing, where just the second you read it, you just can't help but smile.
Do you have a photo?
And they're from Ontario. Sorry, what was that?
Do you have an image of this?
I don't.
Or a picture?
I don't have an image of this. I wish I did. I'm sure it'll be available. You can probably find it online.
Yeah, because I'm totally here for some description on how they were. Is seated even the right word? Like how they got on the scooter and how they positioned themselves and what they do when the thing is actually in motion, because that all takes a lot of teamwork. Good on them. That is so cute.
I know. And they're Canadian. They're from Ontario, which our neck of the woods as well. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because in this article, it says that Sashimi, so the cat, won't train with other cats, preferring Lollipop's company, while Lollipop won't share equipment with any other animal. So they're really, truly linked together, where they're truly best friends, even though they're two different species. One's a cat and one's a dog. Yeah. And their owner, Melissa Millette, who's a 40-year-old professional dog trainer from Ontario, she has 8 other dogs, among which we can find in her record-breaking star Jelly Bean and three other cats. So the Guinness Book of Records isn't unfamiliar with these animals. And it's just so funny to see how connected they are. And apparently, here's a quote, Lollipop and Sashimi both enjoy the scooter alone, and it had never occurred to me that they would ride together, says Melissa, explaining how the pair came up with this trick all by themselves. So I guess individually they would start to ride the scooter and monkey see, monkey do. They wanted to do it together. And next thing you know, they're in the Guinness World Record book for 2022. So just kind of a lighthearted story from this one.
It's so cute because I think when it comes down to training, right? Like, yeah, a lot of it is just the cuteness is so, it's too much to handle. So cute. But also the training that comes with, you know, getting these animals and these friends to do what they got to do. It's a lot of work. I remember even something simple as target training, like trying to get Glizzy to pull on a doorknob or something like that. Took forever. And, you know, he's cute, but the training for a lot of this stuff that isn't just for basic training is kind of hard.
Yeah.
So, and above and beyond, if you ask me.
I'm the same way, where I have a cat and a dog. And right now, Ollie, our dog, is starting to learn his basic commands as, you know, sit down, give me paw, come here. Yeah. He knows his name.
Those things
basic stuff like that. Like, you can teach a dog that. But the cat, on the other hand, like, you can tell a cat, come here. It's almost impossible to train a cat. Although, actually, my cat, Simon, he knows his name. And if you call him, he does come. But that's basically it. I don't know how you would train a cat to go onto a scooter and to go on a scooter with a dog. That's got to be pretty tricky. So, you know what? I'm going to look for an image, and then maybe at some point later in the show, I can sort of paint a mental description for you.
That would be awesome. Thanks, Jeffy.
No problem.
That's Lifestyle with Jeff Ryman, and he joins us Fridays for the Lifestyle, Wednesdays for Health. After the break, we're going to be checking in with John Beeler of the App Show on our app update, and amongst the things we're going to talk about is Amazon firing companies for fake reviews. We'll be back with that on Kelly and Company. Saturday on The Pulse on AMI Audio with your host, Juita Gupta. 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Pacific. They'll be speaking to Labyrinth Jacobs and Odelia Bay about the new book that explores the interaction between disability and the law in Canada. That's Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 Pacific on AMI Audio. Some new scheduling going on with AMI Audio. So this is the new timing, Saturdays for The Pulse with your host, Juita Gupta. I'm Ramya Amuddin here with Jeff Ryman for the first hour of Kelly and Company. And let's get to a Friday staple of ours, talking app updates with our friend John Beeler of The App Show.
This is The App Show, unlocking software secrets for smartphones, tablets, TVs, and more.
John, got to ask, because you're all the way in BC, are you feeling this fall weather that has come a few days ago and Ramya just realized?
No, actually, it's been beautiful here, and it's going to be a high of 24 today in Vancouver. I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
Wow, that is double our degrees. We're at, what, 12 degrees Celsius right now, Jeff?
That's what I heard earlier. Probably something in around that. Let me just do a quick check here, because it was pretty cool. It's 16 degrees currently. 16.
Okay, warmed up a bit.
Yeah.
A bit.
Just a little.
Yeah, but we're bringing the hoodies back out, which is actually my favorite season is hoodie season. So I'm kind
it's
of excited.
Cozy season, yeah.
It is. Yeah, it's totally cozy. Kind of another cozy place is IKEA, but not in this conversation. So we're talking about IKEA's $39.99 pad adds built-in wireless charging to almost any table. So does this really work and how?
Yeah, this is a really cool thing. I mean, it's not really app related, but it's for your phone. So I thought it'd be cool to include. IKEA's made Qi chargers, these little wireless pads you can put around your house, has a USB cable going to, you know, a charging block or an outlet. And they've just sort of upped their game. They've created this little box that you would attach underneath like your coffee table, an end table, your nightstand, whatever. And it essentially just either double-sided tape or you can screw it into place. It turns that wooden or plastic surface into a charging spot. And it even comes with like a little sticker. So you have like a target of where to put your phone. And I think it's really great. Like if you have like a desk that you're using all the time and you're working from home, you just put your phone down on the desk and it's charging.
Now, does it depend on how thick the surface is, or if you don't get the mark right on, you know, like, do you know that your phones are charging well, or is it too early to tell all of this?
Well, there is a thickness issue. It can only be, I think it was something like 2 centimeters thick of wood, which is, you know, kind of like the standard IKEA tabletop that they sell for their desks. But it is a little too early to say because it hasn't actually come out yet, but it's coming very soon. And I think that the challenge will be knowing that you're actually charging. I think a lot of times people will just throw their phone on a charger and just assume it's working and they've got a good solid connection. And that's not always the case. That's kind of why Apple came up with the MagSafe stuff. So you actually, it locks into place with the magnets. This does not do that. And especially because you're doing it through a wood surface or a plastic surface, depending on the table you're using, you're going to want to make sure that you get the little light up, and it usually makes some kind of like vibration and
sure,
so you know that it's charging. So, but I still think it's pretty cool. And you know, the $39 price, that's actually the American price. It's probably going to be closer to 50 in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really nice for people that want to have like that clean aesthetic and don't want to have like a charging block that looks like a coaster on their table. They can just sort of have this.
You did say that there's going to be a cord running from the box to somewhere, right?
Yeah, you're going to have to plug it in underneath, but at least you can sort of hide it as opposed to it being on the table itself.
Yeah.
I have a question as well. Just thinking about this, it's a great idea. I think this is awesome, but can it charge more than one device at a time since it's a table? Like, say, if you have 2 or 3 phones or devices on that table, will it just charge one, or will it charge all 3 or 4 just at a slower pace, or how does that work? Does it
the whole table top into a charging surface. It's you basically have to be directly above this little box, and the little box is probably about the size of your smartphone box, so it's a fairly small target. You could have multiples underneath your desk or your table, you know, one on either side of your mouse and keyboard or, you know, whatever your configuration is. But it'd be nice if you could just like turn the whole surface into a big charging pad.
Yeah.
Not quite there yet.
Maybe one day. Maybe one day we'll get there. I'm sure we will with the way technology is going. Item number 2 on this is iOS 15 is now available. So, John, what can we look out for?
Yeah, this is, you know, been kind of a long time coming. There's some really interesting accessibility and usability features that come with iOS 15. I tell everybody, don't hesitate to upgrade, because there's a lot of great features that are included with it. One of them is basically the ability to have a FaceTime chat with a non-iPhone user. You know, that's a pretty big deal in the Apple space, where essentially it turns FaceTime into kind of like Zoom or Skype, where you can actually send them a web URL on an Android device or a Windows machine, and they can join your FaceTime call.
I like
that's
it.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and I remember when you, Mike Fair, you know, all the tech guys on our show who bless us with all the information, you guys were talking about this, and I do feel like this is very beneficial, even with everything else that's out there, John. We know Zoom is huge right now. We have all the other platforms where you can do like file sharing along with collaboration and interaction that way. But FaceTime seems to just be seamless. It's one of these things that within the Apple universe, everyone just uses FaceTime, and we all use iMessage, and we all do this and that. So it's great to have this option available. Now, when are we going to be able to iMessage or voice message, you know, when you can send like a voice iMessage to non-Apple people? Because I'm waiting for that day too.
Yeah, you and me both. That's been something that everyone's been wanting. And there's been all kinds of interesting workarounds and hacks that people have done that unfortunately Apple has shut down because it usually involves rerouting your message through another service. And then it sort of gets lost in translation a little bit. But yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to the day when, you know, we have interoperable iMessage. But this is not the iOS update that brings that, unfortunately.
All right, fine.
But one thing it did bring that I think is really cool, and we've talked about it when they first announced the beta, is the live text function. So any photo that you have, and this is kind of like how Google Lens works on the Android side, but now this is available natively in the Apple camera, whether it's on an iPad or an iPhone. With iOS 15, you take a picture of a sign, a phone number, a website, anything like that, it becomes clickable, copyable text. So you can actually take a picture of, like, say a van went by that had a phone number then you wanted to call. You just click on the phone number on the van and you can call it. Like, it's that simple.
I love that for so many accessibility reasons, because this means that it's like OCR, right? Like the actual image is becoming text. So that's accessibility in itself. Hooray. And then the second part is, being able to interact with it. The addresses will probably, you know, be interactable as well, I'm assuming.
Yep. And you can even translate that text.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I can definitely see all of this working, especially hand in hand with the camera. You know, how lately it's been really great using the iPhone camera, because Siri is kind of telling you, the AI is telling you what's going on anyway, what's being marked or in focus. And then on top of that, being able to convert it to text. Great. Anything else in this one?
Well, this feature also can identify things using the AI. It's like, kind of like you said, you can actually identify, like, you took a photo of a piece of art, a landmark, a plant, or even a pet. It will identify that breed of dog, that type of plant, all those kinds of things. It's kind of, you know, magical in that sense.
Yeah, so we don't have to go to Google Lens anymore.
No.
Ideally.
Yeah, I mean, nice. Is it going to be perfect? Probably not. But, you know, it's a stepping stone. And I think, like all AI features, the more people that use it, the better it gets.
Nice. Okay, cool. Let's move on to Amazon. This is what we've been talking about. Amazon has banned over 600 companies for fake reviews. So how are they doing this?
So the biggest problem with Amazon is that a lot of people base their purchasing decisions on the reviews. And so what a lot of these manufacturers realized early on is that if they incentivize the reviews, they can get lots of positive reviews for probably very low money. And what happens is, you typically would buy something, you'd get it from Amazon, you know, same day, next day, whatever. And inside your package would be a little coupon saying, hey, you've run a prize, or give us a review and we'll give you a coupon for a discount on something in the future, that kind of thing. And so people were being incentivized to do that. And in 2016, Amazon actually banned that practice. But a lot of companies were doing it in kind of a different way. I even had this happen to me fairly recently where I bought a automated pet feeder. So this little machine that's not connected to the internet, and it basically feeds my cat at a certain specified time. And inside the package was a little coupon saying, hey, give us your email and we'll send you some accessories for this thing. And it turned out to be like an extra stainless steel bowl for the food. So you could like swap them out and clean them and that kind of stuff. Kind of handy. But I had to jump through hoops to get that thing if I wanted it. I would have to leave a review, take a screenshot of the review, and send that to their email. And that's basically the practice that Amazon's trying to prevent, because I'm going to give them a good review because I want the free thing, right?
Right.
So,
yeah. And that's huge, because for myself, and I don't know if you guys are the same, but whenever I'm buying a product on Amazon or online, one of the first things I do is check the star rating. Like if it's less than 4 stars, I'm kind of hesitant on it. And then I check the reviews as well. And like, I'll almost read all of the reviews. you know, I really want to make sure I'm getting a good product. So I'm all for this. I'm kind of glad that Amazon is taking that into their own hands and really cracking down, because it can be deceiving for people who are trying to buy that product. And if it's not the product that you thought it was, and then maybe you just wasted a bunch of money. It's a scam, really. What it is. So it's good for Amazon for doing this.
Yeah, the challenge I have is that I liked a lot of the companies that got banned. I liked the products legitimately. So that's the challenge, because now I can no longer get them on Amazon, and I have to, the scenario for these companies is they have to set up their own web stores, and I have to buy it remotely from them without all the benefits of the Amazon delivery and the return policy and all that kind of stuff. So
it's a lot.
Yeah.
There are a lot, because 600 companies or over 600, that's a lot. So were there like a lot of big names on this list?
There was, yeah. A lot of the tech that we talk about on our show all the time, little battery packs, cases, all the little bits of tech, you know, probably like the sub $100 gadgets and accessories for travel, for, you know, charging your devices.
Wow.
Those are all gone. Like 600 different companies that cost 3,000 different seller accounts.
Unbelievable. That is a lot. But I mean, it's a big statement on Amazon's behalf, though. We'll see. Okay, one more thing we want to talk about before we let you go. We can now save our vaccine QR codes to the wallet app on our iPhones in iOS 15.1.
That's right. So not quite yet. So the beta is available now. And this is a really neat feature. If you have a QR code for your vaccine passport, as we call it in BC, I forget what you guys call it in Ontario, if it's still a passport or it's a receipt or something, I think I heard on the news.
I don't remember. Maybe a receipt.
Yeah. So,
I think we're calling it a passport.
Good. So yeah, and Quebec has this as well, as I think does Manitoba, and Alberta is getting it. So very soon across Canada, pretty sure. But they've made it really easy. What you do is you scan your QR code with your phone, with your Apple phone, and it will actually take that vaccination detail, or you know, a very light version of it, because it's only whatever is in that QR code. It'll actually put that into the Apple Health app. So you actually have that alongside your steps and everything else. Mm. And there's a little button in 15.1 to add it to your wallet. So you just have to double tap your power button and it pops up on the screen. You can get scanned at the restaurant or wherever you need to get into with your passport. And it has your name and it has your the vaccination status that you have on it, and you're good to go.
Sounds good. It sounds like an easy way to do it, John. We got to run. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
John Beeler of The App Show, and he joins us every Friday for our app update. After the break, we're checking in with Karen McGee from Ottawa to get some stories from that end. We'll be right back. His quote electrical work. You think he's scamming us, Jeffy? It is a Friday.
Oh, for sure it's a scam.
For sure, okay.
You're talking about scams on Amazon. You go, just Kelly McDonald all the time.
Yeah.
These little scams. Oh, guys, my power's out. It's a Friday.
My internet. Yeah.
You know, I don't want to come on. You know, it's okay. But it's okay. I mean, it's okay to do that every now and then, I guess. But yeah.
Every now and then,
you know. Yeah. No, I never do. But I guess for cows, maybe.
I guess he's not used to having we're not used to it being back to normal again, right? Because during the summer we had every other Friday off pretty much. And now
he's
we're having
these schedule.
Moments. Yeah. Yeah, that might be it. I don't know. I'm just saying it's a possibility. Let's see.
Oh man, you know who's always here and always good with us is Karen McGee, our AMI content development specialist in Ottawa. Karen, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. You know, I was chatting with Kelly on the phone yesterday, and he mentioned something about a power outage possibly happening. So, yeah. I don't know. It seems a little suspicious to me.
Yeah, he was prepping the scam.
He's starting to lay the groundwork. You know, it's like when you want a day off the next
alibi.
Day, you start to cough at work, going, yeah, like laying the groundwork. Laying the groundwork. He's a smart man.
He is. He's done it the right way, especially on a Friday, too. I mean, nice, easy way to coast into the weekend, blame it on the power. No one can say anything. And yeah, good alibi on Kels. But he's been working on this. He's a mastermind at this type of stuff. Karen, I want to get into the first topic. And this one I love. This one's really, really cool because a father from Hamilton has developed an app to let parents know exactly when a school bus is arriving at their stop. Can you tell us more about this?
So, okay, when I was a kid, your parents just said, go to school. And you could go to the bus stop, you'd go to the school, and you would just show up and come back. Nowadays, from what I understand, from what I see on my street, parents have to be there when the bus comes, and be there when the bus drops the kids off. You can't just sort of drop the kids off and they run into the house and away you go. They want to make sure there's an adult there. So this can be a problem, because buses don't always come at the same time. And Todd Lee, who just happens to work for Google, he's the father to three children. According to the Hamilton Spectator, a couple of years ago, his sons were first getting... Sorry, my cat just stepped on the computer. We're still there, right? Okay. his wife would have to do a bit of juggling with the cat. The rabies cat. To ensure they made it to the bus stop on time for pickup and drop-off. So one September, the bus driver said, okay, I'm going to use my Find My Friends app, which we're familiar with, so parents know when the bus was getting close. Well, there's a couple of problems with this. It's not always accurate, and it's not really private for the bus driver. If they forget to turn it off at the end of their shift, then all the parents know what this bus driver's doing all weekend. You know, just you need a little privacy sometimes, separate your job from your personal life. So with a little nudge from the bus driver, Todd developed the Yellow Bus app, spelled Y-E-L-O, bus, not the whole world, which I love that name. It does use the bus driver's phone. It can be turned on and off at the beginning and end of the route. And to use it, parents actually have to sign up and be given an access code by the school to see the child's route. Parents can see when the bus is coming to pick the child up. Parents can see when the bus is getting close to drop off. Parents can also use the app to let the school know when their children won't be in school, which is super handy and great for the schools because then there's not a lot of phone calls coming in. It's all done through the app. And for privacy reasons, families can only see their own child's stops. You don't know like when your best friend's kid's getting dropped off or when... You know, your frenemy's kids getting dropped off only when your kid's getting dropped off. So I thought this was very creative and a really neat solution to keep. I don't know, like, if you guys noticed this, but I know on our street, like, live in the country, the parents start hanging out about, you know, 3:45, looking up and down the road for the school bus. And, you know, if you're working from home, which a lot of parents still are, it's hard to get out and do that just to wait for the school bus. And if you're not out there waiting, the bus will not drop the kids off and you've got to go track them down later. I know someone that happened too. Trust me.
And I think this will be super beneficial in the Canadian winters. No one wants to stand out there when it's minus 30 and a blizzard out or something. Really good idea. I feel like this has been used a lot, especially in my neck of the woods here in Durham. where Durham Transit actually has something very similar where you can track and see when your bus comes. I mean, it's sometimes not always the most accurate, but it is kind of nice to know if your bus is going to be a little bit ahead or a little bit behind or just on time. Obviously, just for the planning of that is super beneficial. Now you add that to kids, where obviously parents are probably going to be even more concerned that their little ones are going to be on this bus, and they can sort of time things out perfectly, drop them off at a specific time, pick them up at a specific time, know exactly where they are, what they're doing, probably gives them a little bit of peace of mind. And yeah, leave it to a father who works for Google.
I love that. That's the best part of the story. Let me look into that for you.
Karen, where is this app available? Is it only available in Hamilton, or is it elsewhere as well?
So right now it's only available from Lee Academy, where Todd's kids go. So yes, in Hamilton. He's hoping that other schools will pick it up. He makes a really good point. It's the point you just made too, Jeff. It's easier right now to track a package from Amazon than it is to track your kid's school bus. You know, and yeah. If Uber can do it, so why, you know, why can't they do this for the school buses? So I think it'd be great if more school boards would sort of buy into this. And, you know, there's a lot of advantages to it, to knowing the kids. And also, you know, even just letting the parents can use the app to let the kids know, let the school know the kid's not coming to school. That's huge too, because it saves on answering the phones or checking messages.
Yeah, it's like real-time updates for anything, right? It's just really convenient when you know that there's a workspace or a particular thing, and you know to go check that app to get all the information. Everyone can be on the same page. Awesome. Can we talk anything else you want to add, or shall we move on to a book club conversation?
No, listen, I'm always ready to talk about books.
Me too. Okay, so the Kingston CNIB Book Club is celebrating its 10th anniversary. First of all, what's the purpose of the book club?
Well, I mean, I know you guys have a very successful book club, and there's an obvious, you know, obvious thing to read books. Anytime I've been part of a book club, there was usually wine involved. And a sweet dessert of some kind.
I miss that whole movement, Karen. I just want to say, my first book club was the Kelly and Company book club, and we're just going virtual. So I miss this whole movement of the wine and books thing. So it's
got
to come back.
It got to a point where only two of us were reading the books. The other ones were just coming for wine. Now, in all fairness, like, most people had young children at the time. Like, this was a couple of years ago. But like, so Pam and I were the only ones who were reading the book, and we were getting mad at everybody because we wanted to talk about the book. They just wanted to get away from their husbands and kids for the night. So it kind of fell apart and became more of a social club. But I love a good book club. I do love, I've got a pile of books, like a dozen of them here in my room waiting to read when I'm off next week. But this book club goes a little further than just the wine. And I don't know that they serve wine, so don't hold me to that. Goes further than, you know, the socialization. Socialization is a big part of it. It's a way for people who are blind, partially sighted, or deafblind to connect with people who have similar experiences. You can have a variety of opinions of the books they read, but it's a way to get to know people who are experiencing things that you are. It's a way to connect, just like the Kelly and Company book club. It's a way to connect with people and sort of share a same experience. And, you know, books are just so awesome. They take you to another place. You can learn even if you don't know you're learning. I have a lifelong relationship with books. My first job was in a library. So reading is really, really important. And this book club has been going, you know, for 10 years. So it's doing well in Kingston.
Your first job wasn't in hockey? Was it a library?
No, it was beneath, actually, ironically, the library was beneath the hockey rink.
Wow, I knew it. So, I knew there would be a connection.
There was a connection. And if I wasn't in the hockey rink, I was in the library. I spent so much time. I started reading Stephen King when I was thinking about this the other day. I was in like grade four or five, I was reading Stephen King, which was not appropriate at the time and is probably why I still have nightmares to this day. But anyway.
Yeah, kind of. But still, you were reading and you got into it. I'm going to be the last person
to be scared.
Yeah, exactly. So where do members get their books from, though? Like, do they have themes or, you know, particular platforms that they use?
So they're actually connected with CELA, the Center for Equitable Library Access. You guys have talked about it a lot, which we know offers people with print disabilities a wide range of books in different formats, from Braille, large print, audiobooks. Longtime club member Ann Jewell told Global News it took her time to get used to not holding a real book and physically turning the page. That's something that's very comforting when you read books. But eventually she got used to listening to books and she really enjoys it now. You know, it's a way to still read and get the experience of the book. And there are some really good reading people. There's some really good audiobooks out there. Like I've done a lot of driving. When I used to do a lot of driving, I used to have books in the car, and there's some really, really good readers who really bring the words to life for you on the pages. And I think it's excellent.
That is awesome. There's a lot. Like I've been talking on Kelly and Company as well as on AMI Audiobook Review about the hundreds and hundreds of books that just keep coming in on Sela and their partnerships with Bookshare and now their new blooming partnership with Audible.com. So there's just a lot going on with Sela. There's never not enough stuff to talk about. And when do they meet, this book club, Kingston?
So they meet the third Wednesday of every month from September to June, so you get the summers off. If you're interested in joining and you live in the Kingston area, you can call the CNIB in Kingston at 613-542-9475.
Amazing. So cool. Well, is there anything you're reading right now or that shelf of books that you're talking about for next week?
I've got a couple things on the go. I'm reading the Bridgerton series because I can't wait for the shows to come out, so I read the books. I've got something called Mexican Gothic on the go, which is really good. And I've got Please Don't Judge Me, Howard Stern Comes Again, which is really, really good. He's an excellent interviewer. And I love his interviews. I don't always like the other stuff. So his book is basically a bunch of his interviews, curated, and they're fascinating.
I watched the first
Bridgerton, but then I had to go read the books. Books are always, that's okay. Books, I get excited. Books are always better than whatever they put 100%. On TV or movie screen.
It's just more that when I watch the TV show first, I wonder if I should go back and read the book. But if I know that there's a book, I'm going to read the book first, you know?
I have a whole list of books that I will know. I'm one of these people that has more books than I'll ever be able to read in their lifetime. Whether it's saved on my book list at the library, the electronic library, I just keep buying books. Like something, a book came to the house the other day, and I told my Jeff that it was a kitchen tool. Oh no, it's a screen. It was a book.
Amazing. Karen, thank you so much.
No, have a great weekend. I'm off next week. I'll see you later.
Karen McGee joining us. She's our content development specialist. After the break, we have The Buzz with Bill Shackleton, followed by learning about the LDS Access mobile class form, and we're going to talk about conversations from throughout the week on Cut for Time. We'll be right back.
When you tune into the show in the middle of an interview.
Have you ever tried to leash a cat?
Yes, it doesn't work.
They lie on their backs and yowl. It doesn't work.
You're listening to Kelly and Company on AMI Audio.
You ever tune into the show when another host takes over and you suddenly say, hey, what? What's going on here? Kelly McDonald returning to the program, Ramya Muthan. So let's get into the truth be known before we bring on Shaq for The Buzz with Bill. So I'm sitting here and playing around, looking at emails, doing stuff, waiting, answering some of the messages and emails up until showtime as we get ready because this electric stuff wasn't supposed to take so long. But then again, all the people who know nothing about hydro told me that. And so I'm waiting around. Amuthan and I are sorting out meeting times and scheduling and stuff like that because it just seems like that's all we do, right? That's what she claims, and somehow she draws me into it. She's the producer, co-producer, and supposed to be in charge of all meetings and, in other words, helping me dodge all that stuff.
Right.
But I noticed that just the rope is tightening around and I'm getting pulled in. So I'm sitting there, messing around, listening, waiting a bit, doing this, doing that. But what can you do when the electricity's off? Because, you know, our world revolves around electricity and everything associated with what we can do. And I look down and realize, hey, man, my computer's charging. Oops. What happened to the days where I could actually walk into a place and tell the electricity was off because I have those superhuman blind ears that could actually hear the...
Well, the humming, yes.
Yeah. I can't tell that stuff as much as I used to be able to. I used to like swear by it, and it used to freak people out. Walk in and go, uh-oh, what? Electricity's off. What's wrong with click? Oh, it is. And that used to be so much fun. And then the next 3 hours sitting in the dark wasn't so much fun. Anyway, I digress, and Bill Shackleton, he waits for us to bring him on in because he's got items that he'll later on say, if they wouldn't have talked so much, we would have got to them all. Shaq, welcome back for The Buzz. We do this at the top of our second hour, Wednesday through Fridays, here on Kelly & Company. Where are we starting, sir?
Well, we're starting with a interesting one from South Korea. It comes from CNN. Mm. A dog that saved its owner's life appointed South Korea's first honorary rescue dog. An interesting story about a 9-year-old woman who went missing, apparently with her little dog in August. And basically, they couldn't find her. So they got CTC videos from a farm where she left, or from a nearby farm. She was found 40 hours later. Now, she is 90 with dementia. So she was in a rice field, and basically what happened was the stalks, you know, the rice stalks were so high they couldn't find her.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent out a drone, a heat-seeking drone, and apparently they did. Now, the dog, I wasn't able to find out what kind it was, but apparently the dog kept her warm for 40 hours. And that's how it saved her, because otherwise she would be, well, she had a little hypothermia. They figured that if it wasn't for the dog, she would have been dead.
Wow.
This is, so it's another, you know, they say a dog is a man's best friend. So this, apparently the South Korea Fire Agency last year has implemented a rule or a law that you could appoint somebody who you think has gone beyond the call of duty, as I'm sure you would agree this dog had done. First honorary rescue dog.
Wow, that's like really cool. And but you guys, as well, people a little better with animals than I am, I'm sure you're never, ever stop being surprised by what they do, Rum.
Yeah, no, of course. And it's because, and I think of the doorbell ID for Danielle Jeankind, the human animal bond, right? That's how she calls it. And I think it's very intuitive to an extent, Kels. Man's best friend, like all these different phrases that we've used generations and generations and centuries. It's because they're just like the stories, the incidences, the little moments that we all share as animal people or pet owners or handlers, they're real. They're real. Like whether or not we share the things that happen daily or the bigger moments, right? They're actually real. This stuff happens and it's so wonderful and beautiful.
And, you know, dogs and animals can do amazing things that we don't even know. And I can't think of a more deserving, you know, person, if you want to call a dog, you know, an animal to be this South Korea's first honorary rescue dog.
Wow.
Really so amazing. Cool. Yeah, it really is. It really is. Shaq, your second thing.
Second. At 101, she is still hauling lobsters with no plans to stop. So this woman is named Virginia Oliver. She's been hauling lobsters now. She started when she was 8 years old, and this is World War II was 10 years in the future. And she started when she was 8. She is regarded by many people as certainly the oldest lobster hauler in the Cape. And some people say she's the oldest in the world. She now does it with her son, with the boat that was named her, that she and her father used to use. And she's reflected on the industry, She's concerned about the depletion of lobsters. I think she said she got 25 cents on the docks. Now she gets six times that. And, you know, lobsters were considered to be sort of the working man's meal. Now they're considered a delicacy. But can you imagine at 101 still doing it? I mean, that's really quite something. I've tried hauling lobsters. I've tried it, and it's not easy.
Now, when we were talking about this earlier in the week, and just blown away by, I can't even imagine at that age. I can't, you know, with the walking and just doing everything, and as you say, the hauling, the strength. Even if, you know, your 70-year-old son does a little bit more and so on. You think of the strength, the durability of these two individuals. Not to mention, Billy, your footsteps, your walking, everything. It just takes one little twisted ankle to create more problems or anything. And I know she had a nipped finger.
Yes,
that
she did.
Made her doctor get on her and say, hey, when you say that you did some of this, did you do some hauling somewhere? Like you said?
Yeah, the trick with doing that is you have to, the lobster trap is in the water. When they swim in, you have to get this trap to the surface. Otherwise, the water, the fish will swim out of it. So you've got to pull like the hinges of you know what to get it to the surface.
That's wicked.
Yeah. So yeah, it takes strength and it takes, yeah, geez.
That's amazing. You know. So when you saw this, you must have been, and again, we go saying that about, wow, animals and stuff like that. But we've this week talked about females in Japan that are, what did Jeffy say yesterday, Rum? 107 years old.
Yep.
Yeah, the oldest sisters.
Two sisters, right?
Yeah.
And then
that's
you
right.
Talk about this lady, all right? Virginia being over 100, 101. And it just staggers you because you think about how much work so many people have to do this to try to keep reasonable health up until you're 70, let alone 30 years later and still being able to do something that a lot of people at 30 and 40 struggle doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's, yeah.
Yeah, really amazing. That's what we were thinking the other day. What's your last piece, sir?
Well, if you want to live like Winnie the Pooh, you can, with the caveat that you're in Britain. So apparently a Winnie the Pooh illustrator has designed a Winnie the Pooh treehouse. It's a B&B. They call it a bear B&B that you can rent. It holds four people, and it's for two nights. And the caveat is that whatever a poo stick is, they're mandatory. I don't have no idea what a poo stick is. Maybe you guys do. I don't. There are snacks at 11 o'clock when Winnie the Pooh apparently snuggled down and rested. And, of course, honey is a thing that you have to have. And it's really that basically they have activities around what Winnie the Pooh would do. So it's kind of a novel thing. It's for two nights. And, as I say, unfortunately, it's only for people in the UK. So there you go. I wouldn't mind doing that. Or I don't know, with the honey, I'm not sure.
Rum, you and the honey thing. Remember we were talking about that earlier the other day?
Yeah, the bees.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
No, not that way, Bill. The opposite. I love bees and the honey. But what I was saying, he had the same exact reaction last time we said it. But I don't know. I never grew up with Winnie the Pooh, so this has no sentimental value for me at all.
No, and I was wondering, what is a poo stick? I mean, I have no idea.
I can make some guesses.
I guess
guesses are wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's what we're gonna hear. No, you guys. Yeah, I kind of wonder, but it's amazing the different things that we just hearken back to, right, Bill? You can sit down, listen to some older music, hear the music of something, or someone talk about The Price is Right, like we did last week a little bit, and it just makes you smile and say, "Oh yeah, good times, old memories." And then certain things you'll laugh about and. Somebody else says, well, what's funny about that? Oh, don't you know about Winnie the Pooh? Don't you know about? No, I don't. And sometimes you can feel so alone with your nostalgia.
Well, maybe one of our listeners can tell us what a poo stick is.
I'm sure they'll tell us all right.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Saying, what's wrong with you people? Come on, that's sacrilege. Yeah, what's wrong?
Yeah. Oh, I know. That's right.
Billy, thanks a lot, pal.
Thanks a lot.
Bill Shackleton, we do it Wednesday through Fridays. We call it The Buzz. He rounds off our week here with The Last Buzz. He's back next Wednesday right here on Kelly and Company. We'll take a break. Yesterday, we struggled at getting in touch with a guest that we want to bring on the program. A really interesting topic that we started last week with Sylvie McGee. The Learning Disability Society announced a new mobile outreach program, LDS Access, intended to work as a classroom on wheels. We learn more about this with Dr. Jennifer Fame, LDS Director of Education, when we return from this break. Nova subscribers can enjoy Kelly and Company over on channel 889. And MTS customers, look for us on channel 704. Visit ami.ca/audio for a list of channel locations in your area. Rumya Muth and Kelly McDonald were the hosts of the program. A little fun this week. We've had a couple of articles that I think we're not handshaking right with Billy and Jeffy. A few subjects that we've already kind of peaked on the show, and suddenly, oh yeah. And yeah. Anyway, continuing our chat about that, it's like been cut for time all week.
It kind of feels like it. We even did it ourselves, right? Where we were
goodness. Yeah. I know with the backup articles that we keep aside, folks, I know I pulled one out again and had to, this seemed familiar. What did I do this in the beginning? Oh my goodness.
It didn't throw anybody off, Kels.
Well, we expanded on the subject, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yay. All right, let's get to another conversation we were hoping to have yesterday and we are able to have today. We're talking about the Learning Disability Society announcing a new mobile outreach program, LDS Access, intended to work as a classroom on wheels. And here to tell us more about this is Dr. Jennifer Fain, LDS Director of Education. Dr. Fain, thank you for coming on Kelly and Company.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're excited to talk about this, but before we get to what's going on right now with LDS Access, can you give us some background on the Learning Disability Society?
Yeah, thank you so much. We've been around for 50 years, serving children and youth with suspected and diagnosed learning differences. We use individualized education programs to work one-on-one with our students to address skill gaps in areas of reading, writing, and math, as well as building confidence, which is one of the biggest challenges for students with learning differences.
Excellent. Really interesting stuff. And 50 years, now that's some history. So at this point, 50 years seems like a great milestone, especially when you think, hey, we've got a classroom on wheels now. Now, how was the idea for this born?
That's such a great question. We have two learning centers, and we work in six partner schools in Lower Mainland as well. But we just still kept hearing from families, we can't get to you. It's too far. The hours are difficult. Parents work. Children are in school. And we just kept trying to figure out, how do we break down these barriers for families? How can we connect with every single child or youth who needs our services? And that's really where the idea for a mobile classroom came from, conversations with our community partners, with our board, with our instructors. Just how do we break down those barriers? So going to our students was identified as the best way to reach them. And how to do that is having a classroom on wheels. So we're incredibly excited to have a fully electric vehicle that has zero negative impact on the community, where we can go to a community center, a school, a location where there are students, and do our full one-to-one program, which is research-informed, has assessments, has all those things that we really need to make sure children are able to catch up right in their local community.
That's really incredible. And the flexibility, as well as the actual outreach and being able to get to communities or people who may not have that access. So can you tell us more about the mobile outreach part of this and creating that? and the need for it.
We really wanted the need for it, yes. With massive disruptions to schooling this past year and a half with COVID, unfortunately, children with learning differences have not been receiving the resource support they generally would in schools. With instruction being fully online for full classes, students with learning differences just simply aren't getting the access to individualized education that they need. So our students are falling further and further behind and really need that one-to-one individualized, compassionate and caring instructor to help them with their learning difference and those skill gaps. So breaking down that barrier of actually being able to get to them in our mobile classroom, and also all our programs are on sliding fee scales, so it's highly affordable to every family regardless of income. Additionally, a key focus with our bus is making it an enjoyable space where children with learning differences actually feel like they want to come and engage because learning is difficult for them, and there needs to be, and the more the environment can be welcoming, the more we can help support our students. So for listeners, we probably can't describe it quite well enough, but the entire bus is actually a work of art. It's a mural designed by a local graphic artist in Vancouver who himself has a learning difference. And it tells a beautiful, highly visual story of transformational learning. And the smiles on the faces of children when they look at the bus, when they come on the bus and see that something so special has been created just for them to support them with their learning, it is actually really just making such a big difference for our students and their lives.
Now I'm just removing that question because I was going to ask you about the description. I'll get that off. Go on to my next one, which tell us what a day then looks like if for what we'd expect in the way of how, when we're in a community, the vehicle works in that serving way, time children spend at it, staff on it, and what does a day look like?
Yeah, so students who work with us in our one-to-one program do 2 hours of instruction a week on 2 separate days. That really through our, we have strong evidence to show that that's the best model for students who are attending school to have that sort of extra top-up time. So our bus would go out on 2 location, and we can work with 3 students at a time with 3 instructors, and they work for an hour with their instructor in a specific explicit instruction program to address those skill gaps. During that time, they're doing explicit work. They're also getting breaks for fun activities and games and some time for rest as well, because it's hard work for our students. So they work with that instructor one-on-one for an hour twice a week. So the bus would go out to that community and twice a week so that each of those students has that opportunity to work and engage deeply with their learning and get the support that they need.
Now, we realize this is a bit of a different scenario than, you know, typical school environments, right? Which can be great as well as challenging. So can you talk a little bit about the challenges that have come up during the pandemic with kids with learning disabilities and the approach for learning lately?
Especially for children who've been trying to learn online. I mean, that can be quite difficult for all learners, yeah. But for students with learning differences, a fully online classroom with 30 other children and one teacher trying to move through curriculum, they certainly are just completely left behind. So what our program is designed to work with students regardless of whether in a brick and mortar school, whether they're doing differentiated or online learning, whether doing a blend of all of those. The idea is that we carefully identify where their skill gap is, what they really need to catch back up to grade level, and we deliver that to them in an individualized way with an instructor specialized in their area of learning difference. So it's meant to supplement and support children in their current schooling environment, whether that be a home learner or in a school, so that they're able to catch up and then rejoin their peers and feel more successful in their schooling environment.
This is excellent. And that was another thing. I was wondering, are you at the house? Do you go to the school? But as you say, you can have that blend or one or the other. And this is what a way to get into the community and serve them in the best way and take away what you hope to be any of the barriers that make it tougher for a student to learn, whether it's online, whether it's getting to and from school, the environment. So what has the feedback been from the families that are involved?
Well, we just launched the mobile classroom, so we're still piloting with some of our current students and families, but we're hoping to actually have our Access Best on location doing this work very soon. We do work in partner schools and in partner spaces, though. So we have for years been delivering our services and partnerships with schools and local community centers. So we have we've just had so much success. I have the privilege of speaking to families every day that say, wow, my child just read out loud to me for the first time, or my child's not fighting me to go to school anymore. We are just making such a big difference, and we want to be in every school and every community center and everywhere, but it can be challenging to make those partnerships and to connect with community. So that's why our Access Bus just breaks down those barriers, and we can be at a park and serve students. We can be outside of school, at a library. It's really just removing any possible barrier for us to serve our community.
What were those conversations like when the designing, the thought, the selling it to, whether it's the school boards, the city partners, what were they like? You know, I don't know what kinds of concerns people had. Well, where are you going to park it? How big should it be? How many kids at once? Because you don't want to go backwards in the steps of being able to serve. Can you share some of that stuff? Because I bet those conversations were great. With what we're hearing from you, it sounds like any potential challenge put ahead, you guys could knock down and say yes. And ultimately it is to help the child and to make life better, but I'm sure there were a few of them that made you stop. How do we get around that?
There were, and I'm so proud of my organization, my board, for their tireless efforts in solving every single problem. COVID, even just how do we have adequate ventilation on this bus? How do we have COVID protocols that are supportive? How do we have a fully electric minibus that also has tables and instructional stations on the inside with Wi-Fi to access our online assessment procedures to ensure we're tracking children's progress? There have just been lots of challenges. And we just through consultation with our families, our community, our instructors, just to figure out what do students need, because we will move mountains to make that happen. And that is really the culmination of this Access Bus, is just we have removed every possible barrier for families and students, and now we just want to get it out there and start making that transformational difference in our students' lives.
Now, Dr. Fain, do you see that this kind of thing could expand to something bigger, something that, you know, really does get traction for all kinds of learning, any kind of learning? I've been reading and hearing and learning more about neurodiversity as a movement, and just that, you know, throughout the pandemic, people who are able to kind of take in information this way or that way and be able to be open about that, right? And say, well, the typical school environments don't work for me, or this remote learning environment isn't working for me, that kind of thing. So do you hope and are trying to build a bigger picture scenario for this?
Absolutely. And advocacy is a really key part of what our organization does as well, because learning differences or disabilities, unlike some other disabilities, aren't highly visual. They're often hidden or invisible. So having people have an understanding of how a student with above or average intelligence who seems like they're doing okay in school is actually three grade levels behind in a specific area because of a difference in the way their brain learns is really tricky. And unfortunately, many parents sometimes are embarrassed or don't know how to help their student, or they don't understand why they're not trying hard enough, which is just simply not the case. They just learn differently. So getting that information out to communities, schools, parents about what learning differences are, which connects into neurodiversity as well, because one can have autism and be autistic and have a learning difference. Half of our students have ADHD or other types of challenges. We just really reflect the broadest spectrum of society we can when we're serving children with suspected and diagnosed learning differences.
Right.
So that's why we're really making that effort to make our classrooms, our spaces, our mobile classroom an inviting and welcoming space that is inclusive of all learners and how they learn. Nothing's more important to us.
Awesome. That's amazing. Can you tell us where to go get more information? Because we're sure other people listening in are going to be going to their school boards or going to resources in their communities. And wouldn't that be something as if this could catch wildfire and the need for vehicles like this to be tailor-made for resources starts to happen?
Absolutely. You can find us at ldsociety.ca. That's our website where we have information about all our programs and our access bus. And we're just so grateful to the donors that have helped us get to this place with our very first bus. And we would just love to move to a fleet of buses and serve all the students that we can.
You're here.
Amazing. Well, congratulations. Thank you so much for coming on Kelly and Company to give us a preview.
Thank you so much for having me.
We were speaking with Dr. Jennifer Fain, LDS Director of Education, that's the Learning Disability Society, about their new mobile outreach program.
How exciting. Well, what's coming up next, folks, is a little bit of chat from us as we take a look at the week in review. We're going to revisit and weigh in on conversations from the past week on Cut for Time. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. This show sped by. It feels like it just got here. That's kind of
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, it would. Oh, it would for you.
Heavens. Mm. I had to wake up at 3. Anyway, folks, something else I tend to do is fall asleep during sports and movies. This week on AMI at the Movies, Ramya and I are watching I'm Not Rappaport with you. Two old men, a white former radical and a black retired janitor, strike up a unusual and funny friendship on a park bench in New York. Well, on that bench, they deal with family, drug dealers, and the pitfalls of age. Tune in to AMI at the Movies Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV. So we just did our cut for time, looked at the week. Rum, can we take a quick look at today's show? And you can let me know what actually happened on it, as well as suggest segments people may want to go back and check out.
Yeah, you're welcome. So we talked to Karen McGee. First of all, we had our app update, which was really full of tons of information, including how Amazon is getting rid of, like they've cut their ties with over 600 companies because of fake reviews and what that really means for Amazon. But what it means for those tech companies, because that's over 1,000 sellers, according to John Beeler, or maybe he said way more than 1,000, like over 2,000. Also with Karen McGee, we talked about an app made in Brampton, Ontario, or sorry, Hamilton, Ontario, that a father created to let people know when the school bus is arriving at their stop. So this is helpful for not only parents and students, but also for the educators to let them know if the student is on their way or if they're arriving at school at all or what's happening. So it was just an incredible initiative that is sparking. It's getting a lot of attention.
In Ryan Huey's absence today on the program, we had a chance to visit and find out with Jennifer Fain about an amazing mobile unit that can go into neighborhoods and helping different children with their learning, children with disabilities, and it really can tailor make that experience for them. And it really sounds like something not only useful, folks, but something that's going to catch on. You can check that out via the Kelly and Company podcast. Simply subscribe. Appreciate it if you give us a rating and review if you can. Also available via podcast is a show called The Neutral Zone. But you could also just hang in here and hear their show live as Brock Richardson now joins us. He's a producer and host to let us know what's going on the program today.
So, first of all, for shame that you fall asleep during sports. I can understand movies, but sports? Come on.
Constantly now. It's Jeff Ryman's fault. He suggested it once, and it became almost like he hypnotized me.
Fair enough. Well, we hope that you don't fall asleep during our upcoming edition of The Neutral Zone, because we're going to be joined by Camille Fournette, who comes to us from New Brunswick, Dieppe, New Brunswick. In fact, she is a triathlon athlete who was fourth place in Tokyo, and so she's going to tell us all about her experience. Plus, we're going to have part two of our conversation surrounding should Paralympians also receive money when they win medals. We left a lot on the table last week, and we want to continue that. All that coming up and more with Mainstream Sports in the final segment.
You can hope, but probably I'd fall asleep, but not as quick as a Muthan over there. sir, you're not with us on Monday. We do our normal report with you. Josh Watson will be here. I don't know why Rumya one time called him Richardson, but you know.
Me? I don't even talk sports, let alone call Josh by wrong last name.
So enjoy your day away from having that chance. We look forward to having him on and giving us delivering to us a great sports report, as you guys always do from the neutral zone.
Yes, it will be good, and I will join the Kelly and Company fray on Tuesday.
Okay, thank you, sir. Brock Richardson, host of said Neutral Zone and the producer for the program. Check them out shortly or available as a podcast. Ms. Amuthan, we'll catch up with you on the other side of the weekend.
That's right. Have a good weekend.
On our Tech Talk Monday, Michael Babcock, he's going to be sharing information about VoxMate with us, a self-contained, accessible user interface for blind and low vision users. Bethany Deer, a reporter, a TV reporter in Edmonton, will be here to preview Monday's episode of AMI This Week. This time, they're going to be featuring the Rocky Mountain Adaptive. Also, Novana, a world-leading producer, distributor, and licensor of children's animated and live action content, announced a new initiative. We're going to learn about that with Afina Jorgopoulos, head of development over there at Novana. And Danielle McLaughlin will be speaking with a disability historian and accessibility consultant, Mark Bookman, about the residual effects about holding the Tokyo 2020 Games. Producers for this show, Jeff Ryman, Rumya Muthan, Marianne Dion Jones. Handling our tech for this show, Akhil Chin Sang. See you, Akhil. And our technical producer for Kelly and Company is Matt Agnew. Audio technical supervisor at AMI Audio is Paula Deneen. Our manager is AMI Andy Frank. Take care, folks. The gateway's open. Get out of here, will ya?
You've been listening to the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
The Real Deal airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.